the amendments are on the UPA bill, Senator Russ's UPA bill. At least all the ones I know about. Yeah.
The Transportation Committee will come to order. Today we've got several bills on the agenda, and first up is Senate File 3137. That's Senator Betzold's bill. And welcome to all of our Burnsville constituents. Thanks for coming today and taking an interest in the process. Senator Betzold.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3137 is cleaning up some more of the loose ends on North Star before it actually gets up and running. Up until now, the Minnesota Department of Transportation has been the lead agency dealing with North Star issues, and we're required to do so because of getting the federal funds available. They were the only one in position to do that. But now that we get closer to the point of actually running the system, starting at late next year, the issue comes up, you know, who should be running it. Now, the bill that you have before you would have the Metropolitan Council be the agent to actually operate the system, which makes a certain amount of sense because, for instance, the Hiawatha line is currently run by the Met Council, and as is the bus system, and both of them are going to feed into the North Star system. It would have seemed a little unusual to have one set of mass transit being operated by one agency and then this one operated by another one. Of course, one of the concerns and issues that we have to consider is the fact that North Star is actually going to be going outside of the area that the Met Council has. That's an issue, of course, that I think the State Local Government Committee is going to have to obviously consider in this bill if it passes out of here, would be having to go there. But I do have, there's a number of people who have an interest in the bill and are here to testify, and I'll turn it over to them for some more detailed testimony on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Murphy and members, my name is Judd Shetnan. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here before you to discuss this bill. This bill has the support of the administration. MnDOT and Metropolitan Council have agreed on this. The counties that extend beyond the seven or the metropolitan area have also passed resolutions in support of this bill. I believe it's pretty straightforward, but one thing that I would like to explain that the bill does is that it also allows our Metropolitan Transit Police to be able to have enforcement powers along that rail line as well. I have not seen any opposition to that. It's pretty straightforward and would be very similar to the type of enforcement issues that we deal with on our transit system. And I've got Rich Rovang with me from the North Star Project Office who can speak to any particulars of the bill, but I think it's pretty straightforward, and if there are questions, I'd be happy to give a shot at it or let Rich try to take that.
Thank you, Mr. Shetnan. And those powers that you were talking about are on page 2, starting on line 30, I believe, for the transit police.
Mr. Chair and members, this language is also included in the transportation policy bill that was agreed to last year in conference committee as well. So we just want to make sure that when this conversion to the council occurs, or if it occurs, that we are able to have this in place if the policy bill doesn't happen this year.
Okay,
which we
well,
hope
thank
it does.
You. Senator Betzold, we need a couple more people here to take a vote. But let's do this. Let's Is there anybody here that wants to testify in opposition to the bill?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's anybody in opposition. Mm-hmm. I have had some concerns, certainly from some labor organizations, just to want to make sure that some of those details are worked out and actually who's going to be operating the lines. I don't know that that's anything that needs to be or can be resolved at this time, but mm-hmm. they seem optimistic that they can work those issues out. But mm-hmm. I'll let them speak.
Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Senator Betzold, we'd like to thank you for bringing this bill forward. The United
Mr. Qualley, even though I said your name, you still have to give your name for the record. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Philip Qualley with United Transportation mm-hmm. Union, Minnesota Legislative Board. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do support this bill, and there are a couple of technical areas that Med Council is committed to be so kind as to work with us on, so that when mm-hmm. we go forward in the House, we'll have worked out and amended some technical points of the language. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Senator Betzel, we're gonna lay this aside till we get a quorum, and then okay. we'll vote on it. But all the parties seem to be in agreement, and you're working towards a resolution. I don't think it's going to be a problem. So,
okay.
Thanks, Mr. Rowley.
I'll be out of the
here.
Room if there's a problem that you want to bring me back in. Just have somebody contact me.
Sure. And Mr. Shetnan, if you could extend the committee's condolences to Mr. Furman and his family, we'd appreciate it.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd be happy to do that. That was very unexpected, and mm-hmm. and I will make sure that we extend that to him.
Thank you. Is Senator Latz here? Okay, we'll move along then. Senator Rest, are you ready with
sure.
Your two bills? You have two bills up here. I take it you want to take the UPA agreement first?
Yes, sir.
All right. That's 3058.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a handout on the UPA just to refresh
okay.
members. Familiarity with this, the UPA is the Urban Partnership Agreement that the state of Minnesota has entered into.
Senator Rest, do you have those handouts?
Oh, they're right here.
Yeah, okay, great.
There you go.
Thank you.
Has entered into with the federal government. As of last year, we were one of the states who were received one of the grants from the federal government. The goal of the UPA is to reduce congestion in metropolitan areas and urban areas. Proposals were dependent upon technology, transit component, telecommuting, and it was called tolling, but we know that in Minnesota to be dynamic pricing. Those four elements were adopted. The proposal was sent to the federal government. The federal government chose Minnesota as one of those corridors. The corridor that was in the Minnesota application was 35W south of Minneapolis out to Lakeview. The language that you have in 3058 is the implementation language for the UPA, add some definitions to the statutes, including dynamic shoulder lane, because they are going to be making use of the shoulder lane. along 35W to allow vehicles to go along that at controlled by dynamic.
Senator Russ, just
pricing.
Moment of business here. Let the record reflect that there is a quorum present. Senator Russ.
Mr. Chairman, did you want to revert to Senator Betzel's bill?
I believe we could do that.
And I'm happy to have mine laid over temporarily.
Oh, no, you can stay right there. Senator Russ moves that Senate File 3137 be recommended to pass and re-referred to...
I think it needs to go to state and local government.
State and local government. Members, this is some of the language that has been worked out between the Met Council and all those jurisdictional organizations on the North Star Line. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Rest.
Sure. So in Senate File 3058, the first section is a definitional section. It occurs actually in another part of the bill, too. It has to be put in two separate areas of the statutes that relate to transportation. The second section puts in place the authority to actually charge the user fees on those dynamic shoulder lanes, which are and the HOV vehicle lanes on 35W, similar to the pricing mechanisms that are used on the men pass lanes on 394. The in subdivision 3, there are references to the I-35W HOV and dynamic shoulder lane account and how revenues from the pricing structure will be allocated and distributed. In subdivision 4, there is an exemption for the commissioner from certain rules. And because of that provision, this bill also needs to go to state and local government, Mr. Chairman and members. Subdivision 5 invokes a penalty for disobeying the law with regard to operating a single-occupant vehicle in a designated HOV lane without the meeting the commissioner's requirements, which is like without having the device and so forth in your car. Section 3 is another definition section with regard to adding roadway to include the shoulder when it is part of a dynamic shoulder lane. Section 4 is that second addition of dynamic shoulder lane to the to the definitions, this time in the traffic regulations section. Section 5 refers to the operation of buses on the dynamic shoulder lanes. That to clarify that it's not subject to those sections of the statute that already permit use of shoulder lanes by buses. And then Section 6 is a directive to the commissioner working with Met Council to report during a five-year period starting in January of next year to the Transportation Committee chairs and ranking minority members about the state's participation in the UPA. Mr. Chairman, that's the bill. Mr. Chairman, Senate Council has suggested an author's amendment for me, which is the A3 amendment, and as I understand from the department, it's also acceptable to them.
Senator Rest moves the A3 amendment. Senator Rest, maybe you can explain what this A3 amendment does while we're passing it out.
Mr. Chairman, this was an amendment suggested by Council, so I need to go back to her on this, although I'm happy to offer it.
Ms. Berzovsky.
Mr. Chair and members, The A3 amendment, first of all, the first three lines, 1.2 to 1.4, clarify that the new revenue split for the fees that are collected does not apply to the I-394 HOV lane. So it restricts the HOV lane revenue split to just I-35W, but it would apply to any dynamic shoulder lanes as it's drafted. So that is a change. Then on page 2, line 25, I suggested changing the head note from rules exemption to exemption from rulemaking and statutory requirements, because it also exempts the authorization from municipal consent and toll facilities laws. And finally, on 2.28, delete single occupant to make it clear that any vehicle that is in one of the applicable lanes, if it's, for example, on a shoulder lane at a time when it is not being operated as a dynamic shoulder lane, that would be a petty misdemeanor as well. So it would just apply to any vehicle.
So, Mr. Chairman, the amendment then makes sure in the first part that we're talking only about the I-35W corridor, and then the second part, they are proposing that they be exempt just about from everything, not only in the rulemaking on the one hand, but then also in statute municipal consent law, and I think that's reflected in the bill summary, but it clarifies it here in the head note or the introduction to the section, and then that the last part of it is you have to obey the law regarding the dynamic shoulder lanes when they're operable and then when they're not. And I think so. That would be my amendment.
Mr.
I just
Arsenault,
repeated it and wanted to make sure that mm-hmm. I was correct, Ms. Berezovsky. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mr. Arsenault, I take it the department has no problem with this clarifying language?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay, great. On the rest, motion to amend, further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, motion does prevail. Senator Rest, do you have
Mr.
another
Chair.
Amendment? Or?
Mr. Chair.
Maybe Senator Dibble does. Senator Dibble?
Mr. Chair, I have the A1 amendment.
Senator Dibble, why don't you explain what the amendment does while we're having it passed out here?
Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment has to do with how the revenue that result from the collection of the tolls is allocated. Mr. Chair, the UPA, the goals of the UPA, as Senator Rest explained, are to reduce congestion in the I-35 corridor through a couple of different strategies, you know, the T's that they talk about, the transit, the tolling, the telecommuting, something else. And what happens presently under the current scheme in the bill, as I review it, in the first year, they collect the revenues to, to pay for the installation of the fee collection system, et cetera. And then if there's a little bit left over, that goes to the Met Council for transit purposes. What happens in subsequent – oh, excuse me, that's not true. I'm more focused on the subsequent years. What happens in subsequent years is up to $1 million is collected to operate the fee collection system. And then if anything's left over, it goes to the Met Council up to $1 million, and then if anything's left over after that, it's split 50-50 between MnDOT and the Met Council. But the part that goes to MnDOT just isn't nailed down. It just says, for transportation purposes, and so it sounds like it's not in the spirit of the Urban Partnership Agreement. It's MnDOT for whatever purposes they see fit for transportation purposes. And the other pieces that might be consistent with the UPA just simply aren't going to cost that much in future years because they're kind of nailed down, the telecommuting programs, the technology programs. But the place where the most benefit in terms of what we're trying to do in that corridor would come from transit. know, the high-speed bus, the bus rapid transit, has the potential of carrying 2.5 lanes worth of additional traffic, and you know, the sky's the limit, you know, in that lane. And so what I propose to do is to say, you know, we collect sufficient revenues to operate the system, and then the remainder goes to benefit transit purposes in the corridor, which could also include, Mr. Chair, the park and ride lots, things like that.
Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, I've had discussions with Senator Dibble about this and about another amendment that also suggests a different way for the funds to be allocated after the system needs have been met. And I think and I would support it. I think that it is, we need to make sure that simply because the 394 dollars were split 50-50, that does not necessarily, should not necessarily serve as a precedent when we are looking at putting in dynamic pricing in this corridor, and maybe in the future in other corridors. So I thought it was worthy talking with Senator Dibble to make sure we had a discussion about it, so that we're not just saying, well, the way we did it there is the way we ought to do it, and it's just the model, and it's just pro forma. So I welcome the opportunity to discuss if the 50-50, particularly in that after the other kinds of needs have been met, once a threshold has been, I mean, you might not even get beyond the threshold, the first threshold, but once you get beyond that, hopefully you would get beyond that, but once you get beyond that, that there would be more dollars would be going straight toward transit O&M and capital expenses. So, and I indicated that just a second that I'm sure that the department prefers their own version.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble,
two things. One is, you know, we continue to have a bad taste in our mouth from 394 because I don't think the Trans has ever seen a nickel from that effort. Secondly, I'm sure the agencies are they had discussions, they came to some agreement. I wasn't a party to those discussions or that agreement. I didn't at all forewarn them that I was bringing this forward. So they're not complicit or advised. So, you know, we'll hear from them, of course.
Okay. Mr. Arsenault.
Mr. Chair, I would, on behalf of the department, I think have to respectfully not support this A1 amendment. You know, we did, as Senator Dibble mentioned, have extensive discussions with Met Council, MnDOT and Met Council, on the distribution of these funds. And there were concessions made in that negotiation. For example, you know, it was important for MnDOT to be able to cover the cost of the toll administering technology out there. And that's what we've called the operating costs of the tolling system. And one of the concessions we gave is that we've only potentially could get 75% of that cost. And so that means we need to cover the cost of collecting the fees or portion of that cost ourselves. So we think it is important to be able to operate and maintain that toll collection system, or we won't have tolls. And the cost of technology on that corridor is going to be high. We're introducing a number of innovative strategies utilizing the latest of intelligent transportation systems to enable this corridor to deal with the, you know, the tolling and the congestion pricing. So I think, and one other point I wanted to make is that, you know, and once our 75% or $1 million, as the bill reads today, is collected by MnDOT, that same amount would go to Met Transit, and then the subsequent amount would be split 50-50. For MnDOT, that would be enhancements or to fill the gap that was left in the administering of the toll collection facility, that 25%. And then furthermore, it's to make improvements on that corridor. And there are infrastructure-type improvements these spot-type locations that sometimes need work in order to handle the capacity. And we believe that there's a number of improvements along that corridor that we could utilize these funds for. So for those reasons, I think MnDOT would have to not support the A1 amendment respectfully.
Mr. Arsenal, Ms. Berzovsky has some doubt about whether or not the language in the bill matches what your testimony just was. So okay. Maybe we could have Ms. Berzovsky explain where we're at here.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to point out that the way the bill is drafted, the lesser amount of $1 million or 75% of the revenues goes to MnDOT. It isn't 75% of the cost of administration.
Correct.
So that may be more or less than the cost of administration.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct, and that is a distinction that I think needs to be made. Right? We in our negotiations agreed that our initial costs were based on the operating cost, and we estimate those around $1 million. So assuming that the revenues come in at less than $1 million, and depending, assuming that the cost of operations is $1 million, we would not be receiving the total cost. So you're right, I was maybe being a little bit unclear on that, but the fact is that's right. This is based on revenues that come in, the lesser amount, but it is unlikely that the 75%, depending on what those revenues are, would cover our costs of operations.
Further discussion on the Dibble amendment, motion to amend. That was the A1 amendment. Senator Dibble.
I'll just reemphasize, Mr. Chair, that I strongly believe that the greatest benefit to congestion in this corridor is going to come from the addition of this bus rapid transit up I-35. And that's going to be expensive, and there's potential to offset that cost. That was what we had hoped to occur in 394, and that never happened. And so I strongly believe that there'd be a huge benefit up and down that corridor if we support bus rapid transit and can grow it, because I think it's going to be extremely popular. If you get a nice clean shot up 35 mm-hmm. on a bus, people are going to look at that and think that's pretty great, and we're going to have buses that are jammed.
Senator Dave.
Mr. Chairman, I would, first off, what we're doing is we're gaining some money for transportation. We're not going to alleviate congestion. The way to alleviate congestion is have three lanes open to everybody and let them drive on it like they, I guess, are going to be paying for it all. When you look at what Hennepin County does and you look at what Ramsey County does, all you have to do is get on a bus in Burnsville and ride down downtown Minneapolis, or get on a bus in Eagan and ride downtown to St. Paul, and I've done both. And there are no HOV lanes in Ramsey County. And the buses use an extra lane that's there to drive on when they have to. So, I don't know. Senator Dibble, all I can say is I know that the light rail's another $30 million in debt. We put $297 million every 2 years into transit. It seems to me sooner or later, what you're going to have to do is raise your fees. Now maybe with a fourth of a percent to all the homeowners, you get that done, maybe that'll happen. But somewhere along the line, the people that are using the system are going to have to pay for it a little bit more. That's my feeling. And I don't think that you can keep, taking little pots of money out of everything. Because I don't think in the long run that's going to pay. I think somewhere along the line I'm sure I don't have a
Senator Day, in full disclosure, our rates are already some of the highest in the nation, and I think hitting the fare box one more time might be a little much. Senator Debel?
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Senator Day.
You could almost, for the people that ride in the Metro Transit, you could almost buy them a $10,000 car every year. For the amount of money we're putting into the transit system taken by the riders, if you think that we're getting anywhere near what we need to run our transit system, I think we proved that that isn't the case by telling people that they're going to get charged in their homes and not even have a vote on it. I think the handwriting is out there that it's going under.
I don't think so. I think last year the Met Council provided 77 million rides, and you know, if you take that, well, the math just doesn't work out, Senator Day. But anyway, we have the A1 amendment in front of us. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion does prevail.
Mr. Senator Chairman, I don't have any other
Rest?
Is
there any other amendments for this bill?
No.
Senator Rest, does this need to go to state and local or
yes,
judiciary?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Senator Rest then would move that Senate File 3058 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Jurisdiction. Senator Saltzman.
You know, I just see this sheet on the Urban Partnership, and to think that it was just a year ago that this was all coming to us. Significant work has been done, and just passing the bonding bill that, you know, commits significant dollars to this through Senator Dibble's district and Senator Dahl and Senator Larson's district, I think is really tremendous. And I look forward to seeing its success because, you know, in the East Metro, there are projects on 494 and the Wakota Bridge that will not be done before this, and were started way before. So I just commend everyone for coming to the table and making this happen because it will certainly serve the 35W corridor communities very well.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Senator West, for carrying this.
Senator Debel?
And Mr. Chair, you have my commitment to Senator Saltzman. The next big idea coming out of the East Metro, I'll do what I can to mobilize resources and effort for that.
Red Rock.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, I'd point out that neither one of those comes anywhere near my district.
Senator Ress, that's why you
sometimes
are a state senator.
Sometimes you just can't be parochial.
Mr.
Right.
Chairman.
Senator Dave.
Do I understand to mean the $909 million train doesn't get to Woodbury? I mean $909 million doesn't even get it out to you?
Senator Saltzman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Day, you know, the people in my community support this because it is the extension that will eventually come to Woodbury. It may not be light rail. It may be a bus rapid transit, but it is a connection for those people. It is very important to them, and that we see that it is a regional transportation system. And we don't see ourselves as just one community, but how we grow the economy in the entire East Metro area. And my businesses and my chambers and my mayors and my county commissioners are very excited about it. So I'm listening to them and my constituents, and I believe that they are very supportive of this project because they see how it will grow into our community.
Mr. Chairman, do you mean the I-35 project where we're putting a toll road in? They would like that? We could move one out that way probably. I'll help work on it. I'll see if I can work something up for you.
Well, before long, Senator Day, we'll get that train all the way down to Owatonna.
Heaven help us.
Well, that'd be great for that great big retail store you got down there on the what is that, the west
Mr.
end of
Chairman,
town?
If you promise me that you won't take tickets, my people will like it.
On the Rest motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Rest, can we take Senator Latz quick?
Absolutely.
Because he's got a couple other commitments. And
no.
Senator Latz, for folks that aren't on the committee, we try to take care of their business and get them along their way. And everybody's a little busy here, and Senator Ress is a member of the committee. So you've got two bills here today. So let's start with 3189, Senator Latz. Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 3189 is a provision basically to plug a hole that was missed in the statute that was passed many years ago when license reinstatement fees were imposed for people who were revoked. There was just about every situation that you can imagine when their license was revoked have to pay a $30 reinstatement fee. Well, there's one situation in which it was not caught, the statute wasn't included there, and that was for juveniles who commit a violation of the controlled substance statute while in a motor vehicle. They get their driving privileges revoked, but there was no reinstatement fee or reexamination requirement for reinstatement. So the purpose of this bill is to include them in those procedures.
Make it consistent with everyone. Is there, Senator Latz, did you bring anybody to testify in support
yes.
of the bill?
Mr. Chair, John Kopczynski from Driver and Vehicle Services is here with me. And Mr. Chair, if I might, I will note, if it hasn't already been done in this committee, the passing of Kathy Swanson, who was a longtime employee of Driver and Vehicle Services, the director of the Traffic Safety Division for many years, and it happens to have also been one of my clients when I was at the Attorney General's office representing that division. So she was a terrific public servant. She just passed in the last week, and there was some mention of it in the paper, but this is my first opportunity in the right forum to say something.
Senator Latz, her visitation is this afternoon, and funeral is tomorrow, and there'll be members that'll be attending both. So she was definitely a true champion in the area of safety in Minnesota, and I don't think we would have one of the lower death rates in the United States without her efforts. So she'll be missed.
Indeed. Mr. Chairman, Joan Kopczynski is here with me.
Mr. Chair, my name is Joan Kopczynski, K-O-P-C-I-N-S-K-I. I'm the Driver Services Director. Thank you for your kind words. First of all, we very much appreciate it. The bill simply, as Senator Latz has explained, is to add MS 171-172 to the list of violations that require a $30 reinstatement fee. It was simply an omission, an oversight on our part that it hasn't been included in the past.
All right. Further discussion on Senate File 3189. Seeing none, Senator Olsen moves that Senate File 3189 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee. Senator Latz, I'm sorry we got to send you back there, but there is a reinstatement fee in here, and so you have to hit one more committee. So
I understand.
All right. Further discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion does prevail. Thank you. Senator Latz, now on 3257.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a somewhat different bill, and I have Travis Schwantes with me from the Public Defender's Office who can answer questions on this. But basically what's happening across Minnesota is that when someone gets their driver's license suspended, they obviously do not have valid driving privileges. If they ignore that restriction and go out and drive again, they can be charged with a misdemeanor criminal offense of driving after suspension. If they go into court and get convicted of that, then they are suspended again. And in some cases, unfortunately, this can happen over and over again. What you end up with, and sometimes what they're doing is they're driving simply to keep their jobs. Now, nothing about this bill or anything that I'm saying is supporting people who drive without valid driving privileges. It's the wrong thing to do, and it's a misdemeanor crime for a reason. But I've seen enough in my experience in courtrooms, and the experience of the Public Defender's Office and others bears this out, is that people get onto a merry-go-round where they just can't get the driving privileges reinstated because they keep getting hit every time they resolve something with a new suspension. So one of the problems that arises then is not only do people not get reinstated more promptly and thereby drive legally and drive typically with insurance as well, but also the courts end up getting a little more clogged up because cases come in and people say, well, let's postpone this case for a month or two. I don't want to get suspended again. Let me get reinstated, and then we'll come back in. We'll try to deal with it. So that turns what may have been one court appearance into two or three court appearances as well at a cost to the public in administering the court system. So there are some advantages to actually eliminating the additional collateral consequence to driving after suspension of the additional suspension of the driving privileges. They will still be faced with whatever criminal consequences are followed in the particular case. Misdemeanor crime is up to 90 days in jail and up to a $1,000 fine, and probation up to a year. So they're not getting out of any criminal consequences by this bill, but it would help people get off the merry-go-round and streamline the court process.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Schwantes, can we take your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Travis Schwantes. S-C-H-W-A-N-T-E-S. I am the managing attorney of the Public Defender's Office, which is located in Stillwater. That's part of the 10th Judicial District. We have eight counties in that district. The counties are located north, west, and east of Minneapolis-St. Paul. In my office, I have 14 lawyers. We represent the majority of defendants charged with the offense of driving after suspension. The substantial majority of everybody charged with driving after suspension are people who fail to pay fines. The people that are charged with driving after suspension are not DUI offenders. They are not drug offenders. They are people that got their license suspended for failing to pay parking tickets, traffic tickets, equipment violation tickets, a broken taillight, a broken windshield. And so they're brought into court on a charge of driving after suspension. In my county, Washington County, as well as most of the counties in the 10th Judicial District, the judges have kind of an unwritten policy of our goal in these cases is to try to get people valid. Our goal in these cases is to try to get people driving with a valid license and driving with insurance. To accomplish that goal, when a defendant comes into court, they typically will enter a not guilty plea, and the judge will give the client, the defendant, an opportunity to get valid. That sometimes takes a while, and so the court does accommodate that because of the importance of having valid drivers. What the defendants then do is they go around to the various courthouses in the state, figure out what their fines are that they owe, and they pay those fines. That requires them to find transportation to the other courthouses. That requires them to have a job so that they're funding that. And then ultimately they have to get back to court in my county with proof that they've paid the fines and they have a valid license. If they're making substantial progress toward paying fines and they're close to getting valid, the court will give an additional continuance to have more time to get that, to get the license valid. The point is, judges are recognizing the importance of valid drivers. To accomplish this, they're giving Minnesota citizens 3, 4, 5, 6 court appearances over a period of months to come in and try to get valid. Most of the people that I represent end up getting valid. What this bill would do is eliminate that coming back 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. The person can resolve their case at a first appearance, at a second appearance, and it saves on resources, prosecution resources, defense resources, court resources. You're not clogging up the courts with driving after suspension cases. Often what happens, too, is when during this the interim of trying to get all these fines paid to get valid, from time to time, our clients miss court because they don't have a valid license. They don't have reliable transportation back to court. They wind up getting picked up on a warrant, not because they're driving again necessarily, although sometimes that happens, but they get picked up at their home, they're taken into jail, and they have an appearance in front of a judge the next day. Last Thursday, I represented 20 people that just got arrested the previous day. Of the 20 people, all of our cases, ranging from misdemeanors to felonies, 10 of these cases were driving after suspension. So of the 20 people that got arrested in Washington County last Wednesday night going into Thursday morning, 10 of them were driving after suspension charges. All 10 of them got out of jail. 9 of the 10 people were people who had previously been released and given an opportunity to get valid. The majority of those people had made progress in getting valid, and the judge released them to continue paying fines. The point is, those would have been half of a calendar on a busy Thursday morning calendar that wouldn't have been on that calendar had they been able to resolve their case right away without getting further suspended. Again, it doesn't apply to habitual traffic offenders. It doesn't apply to DUI offenders. It doesn't apply to felony drug offenders. It applies to people whose licenses are suspended for failure to pay fines.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Schwantes. Discussion from the committee. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one question of the testifier. Those 10 that were pulled over for, I mean, they're not pulled over simply for suspension of licenses. Is there some other reason why they were pulled over?
The 10 people that I was talking about were people that, that's a good question. Sometimes it's that because the officer has ran the plate on a random registration check and they see, the licensed driver of this vehicle is suspended, so I'm going to pull this person over and verify that that person is driving after suspension. Other times it could be anything, failure to signal, a lane change, things like that, that gets them pulled over. Okay. I don't know if that's responsible or not. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I guess I was just curious because I think there's probably some other mitigating reason their driving behavior or something would cause them to get pulled over. Maybe hopefully that gets addressed too. You know, the suspension of license for a fine is one thing, but obviously I would think they were getting pulled over for other reasons besides simply that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
If someone were pulled over for speeding, for example, they might just get a speeding ticket and be left to go on their way. But once they're pulled over, the officer is going to run their license and see if their status is okay. And they'll do a warrant check as well. If they're suspended, then they're going to, all of a sudden, they've got a misdemeanor issue instead of a petty misdemeanor speeding ticket. They get taken into custody because the officer can't just let them drive away on a suspended license. So now you've got the police officer taking the additional time to arrest someone, take them down to either their local jail or ultimately in Washington County, down to the Washington County jail, getting them booked. You got all the booking procedures that all those jail folks have to go through, and they're held overnight at public expense until they appear in court. And not to mention, you might cost a person his or her job if they don't show up for work the next day without an excuse that maybe they want to pay, or maybe just failing to show up could cost them their job. And the other collateral consequences, all because maybe they got pulled over because they had a speeding ticket. If someone were able to deal with this up front on a first appearance, they're still going to be on probation. There's still the incentive to try to get all of their other stuff wrapped up. A condition of probation may be within 90 days, pay off all of the fines that originally caused you to be suspended. Figure out a way to get to all the courthouses, whatever the case may be. Because when probation is over, the probation office is going to run their record, and they're going to find out what the status is. Get valid before the end of probation. And if they don't meet the conditions of probation, then they get back in on a violation and they're looking at additional consequences. So all the incentives in the system can still be there to get someone valid again, but you don't keep them on the merry-go-round and you don't keep clogging up the courts along the way if this bill were to pass.
Well, we're going to go to Senator Olson and then Senator Olsen, but we're going to have some testimony from Vehicle Services as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. if people are driving with a suspended license and have all of these tickets and infractions, why is it we want to make it easier for them to get back on the road? I mean, it seems like we're eliminating any consequence for irresponsible behavior. I'm not sure. Maybe my head isn't working real well. My voice isn't, obviously. I understood the cost savings, but does this make us any safer? I mean, if we have suspension of driver's license, it should be serious enough. I mean, to have lost their license.
Mr.
We don't do that for just a broken taillight, surely. I'm not quite tracking.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, for any offense for driving after suspension, the person is still facing 90 days in jail and up to a $1,000 fine. Judges for habitual traffic offenders aren't afraid to sentence people to 90 days in jail, which is a substantial consequence for people that didn't have money to pay to get valid. If their driving conduct is so serious, such as hit and run, reckless driving, careless driving, DUI, their license aren't just suspended. Their license are revoked. If you're a really bad driver, you get canceled, inimical to public safety, which makes it nearly impossible to get valid after you're canceled, inimical to public safety. Further, if you have a certain number of violations within a 12-month period or a 24-month period, your license can be suspended or revoked for a longer period of time. So right now there's already a scheme in place where if your driving conduct is really bad, you can be suspended or revoked for a greater length of time. What the bill seeks to do is if you're driving after suspension, you can still go to jail, you can still pay a big fine. This just makes it, you don't have to wait 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 180 days to reinstate your driving privileges. You're still being punished, you're still serving jail time, you're still paying a fine. And if the conduct is severe, you're being charged with a more severe offense. Felony offenses, gross misdemeanor offenses, reckless or careless driving, where you've got significant jail consequences there.
But Mr. Chair, but you're going to restore their driver's license.
If what they have is driving after suspension, and if they paid their fines, and then I think that's appropriate. Because, again, for the drivers that have awful driving conduct, that are causing accidents, that are doing hit and runs, that are driving while intoxicated, I can't think of any other bad driving conduct. For the people that have 4, 5, 6 speeding tickets, you're not going to be suspended. You're going to be revoked. There's three different things that can happen to your driver's license. It can be suspended, revoked, or canceled. The serious offenders get revoked or canceled. The people who don't have money to pay a fine for having a broken-out taillight, having a cracked windshield, failing to pay parking tickets, those people aren't public safety risks. So this bill doesn't put bad drivers back on the road sooner. The bad drivers are revoked or canceled, and those people are still going to be revoked or canceled, and they're still going to have significant hurdles and significant jail time and significant fine consequences and probation consequences before they can ever get on the road again. This is aimed at people who don't have money.
Mr. Chair, if I might add,
Senator Lance,
in some ways, perversely, this bill would make it more likely that a driving after suspension conviction is going to go on someone's driving record, because what's used now is because the judges and the prosecutors recognize that a conviction for driving after suspension is going to resuspend someone, and thereby make it even more difficult to deal with all of the other, the other fines, whatever the original cause was for the suspension. they hold it off the record, and they keep putting it out and putting it out. And then once they've come into compliance with everything else and they get valid, then they know if they're going to put the DAS on the record, they're going to get resuspended again, and that was what they were trying to avoid in the first place. So in a sense, this will make the record a little more clear in terms of what was actually going on. What this does really is it gets people back on the road with valid driving privileges sooner. We're all better off if we have valid driving privileges than if we don't, because we're also then more likely to have insurance on our vehicle as well. So I should note also, for people who are driving, who are suspended for these other reasons, they can often, depending on the circumstances, be eligible for a limited license for work. But that's not the only reason. A lot of them don't realize that, for starters. But that's not the only reason, of course, people drive. They have families to take care of and other things like that. I'd rather see them driving with a valid license than not.
Well, is there anybody else that wants to make a comment? Does DVS have anything to say? Non-committal? Perfect. Works for me. Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Latz, quite a few times before this committee we have associations of the State Patrol or the sheriffs or the peace officers. Have they taken a position on this, or have they worked with you on this bill at all? I'm just kind of curious what their thoughts might be on this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, none of those organizations have contacted me with regard to this bill. I don't know if they've been in touch with anyone from the Board of Public.
All right, we're going to take some testimony here.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is John Kingry, speaking in behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. I believe this bill was introduced on Thursday and scheduled for a hearing today. And so I apologize that we have not had the opportunity to comment on it. I believe this will be going to the Judiciary Committee after today's hearing, I'm assuming that. And I wanted to let the author know and the proponents that I'm hopeful we can provide more detailed comments at that time. I must admit, I'm kind of confused about the bill, and I guess my challenge is to get smarter on it between now and the next stop, as to whether it is just because they have failed to show up for a hearing, or they have failed to pay a fine, or it sounds like any subsequent conviction, there would be no suspension. I'm going to take the wild guess that if it's the broader interpretation, that we may have some concerns. If it's merely the failure to pay a fine, that's a fairly narrow in scope issue, and it might be one that that we'd be more comfortable supporting. But at this time, I just wanted to let folks know and the author know that hopefully by the end of the week or next week, we can provide more detailed comments. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well,
thank you. And you know, committee members, I do know for a fact that, you know, there are, and it's mainly younger people, they get into this cycle where they're just back and they're suspended and they're just starting to get out of being suspended, and bang, they get suspended again. And it just kind of continues on and on and on and on. At least Senator Latz is trying to provide us with a way of getting those people reinstated and getting them legally back out on the road. And, you know, I think that's what we want, is we want all of our drivers to be licensed and legal out there. So make sure that you, Senator Latz, you go forward, work to try to address some of those concerns.
Mr. Chairman, I should note this is broader than just someone who was suspended for failure to appear or failure to pay a fine. That's currently in statute. So this would be anyone who's convicted of driving after a suspension, whatever the suspension was for. But the list of what you're suspended for are for much less serious matters than what you're revoked for or canceled for, and that's the point. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Skoy would move that Senate File 3257 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Senator Latz, I think that was it for the Latz transportation package here.
That's it for that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great.
Senator Skoy for moving the bill.
Senator Rest, you had the last bill on the agenda, Senate File 3071. Senator Rest, Senate File 3071.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 3071 is a proposal that would make Minnesota the first state, as I understand it, in the country to require 24/7 running lights on vehicles. The proposal. Current law says that there are certain conditions under which you have to have your headlights on. Obviously, sunrise to sunset to sunrise, inclement weather, et cetera, even during the day. What this proposal would do would be to require headlights on 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, no other states have it. However, I think it is a new safety measure that Minnesota should seriously consider. And as I understand it, and I don't know the exact title of the association that it comes from, that's made up of insurance companies that looks at safety in the operations of automobiles, but as many of you know, more and more automobiles are equipped by the manufacturer to automatically come on when you mm-hmm. turn the key in the lock, and they're always on. You have to go out of your way to turn them off rather than turning them on. So I do believe that this is a coming thing that will eventually be done automatically. But Minnesota could get a head start on doing that by requiring it, and I see it not as a burden, but as an opportunity mm-hmm. to take a safety lead. It is something quite new.
mm-hmm.
I think it's been suggested before. It was an issue that was brought to me by one of my constituents and seemed like to me to be a worthy idea for us to consider.
Thank you, Senator Rest. And I think most of the studies that have been done out there show that having your headlights on 24/7 is a good idea. There's European nations that require it.
Exactly, yes.
Lights
already.
On it mm-hmm. all the time. And I it's probably time to do it here. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rest, I think you have a drafting error, because you're talking about these automatic headlights, and I don't know about what they are on all vehicles, but I know on the Chevy pickups, just the headlights come on. Mm-hmm. And the way this is drafted is every vehicle shall display lighted headlamps, lighted tail lamps, and illuminating devices. And if you're going to count on the automatic headlights, they don't light the tail lights or the other illuminating devices. They just light those little running lights in the front. And so if what you want to get at is just to have the front part of the vehicle lighted, you'll have to change your bill, because what you've got drafted doesn't do that.
And Senator Rest, you understand what Senator Skoy is saying, and my Chevy pickup was the same way. You turn it on and the headlights come on, but the running lights in the back didn't come on. Either that or my bulbs were burnt out after 300,000 miles.
I would defer to Senate counsel as to what how the bill could recognize the concern that Senator Scoy and Senator Murphy just brought up, to which I'm sympathetic, I understand.
I see what you're saying. There are times when you want to have all the lights on. All the lights, which is the front headlights.
Senator Russ, Ms. Beerzowski tells me that this is more than just changing a couple words around in here to make that fit, and I'm wondering if maybe we could lay this over till the next
Chairman,
committee hearing.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be, I do think this is a good idea. We ought to move forward on it, but let's get it right. And yeah. I'm happy to have the bill laid over, and maybe if there's going to be an omnibus bill, transportation policy bill, that the committee would look favorably on considering moving forward on this in the policy bill.
Okay. Is there anybody who wanted to provide any testimony on this bill today, knowing that we're going to take it back up in the future here?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just thinking that, I mean, as we're talking about vehicles that turn on automatically, and if this were to go forward to any degree, maybe there should be some provision in, or at least discussed, that, you know, in 2010 or 2011, that we just, if you're going to sell a vehicle, if we're going to go this direction, that all vehicles should have that capability that are sold in the state. And that way there's not people, oops, I forgot to put on my, turn on my lights today. Just, I mean, I have one vehicle that does that. My truck doesn't do it, but my wife's Volkswagen does. And, you know, if we're going to move this forward at any degree, I mean, I think that take the pressure off of individuals for having that mistake and just have them, all vehicles sold like that. I don't, it seems like it would be an easy modification in the vehicle for future runs in the at the plant. So something to talk about.
Yeah, a lot of the newer vehicles are coming that way already. I mean, even pickup trucks and
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, these vehicles that drive with four headlights, bright ones that drive you nuts, do they all come on automatically, too? There ought to be a law.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. Chair, if Senator Olson drafts an amendment to ban people from driving with fog lights unless it's foggy, I would support it.
Okay. Would you accept that as a friendly amendment on your bill?
I certainly would. They drive me crazy as well.
Okay. Let's work on it.
Okay. All right. With that, then Senator Ress would move to lay the bill over. And with that, the committee is adjourned, and we'll see you on Thursday. Thank you very much.